From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. And on this day, we'll look at the impact of Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins' announcement that she won't support Betsy DeVos as education secretary, and why Maine Republicans are looking to make citizen initiatives tougher to get on the ballot. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
We have been hearing this afternoon about Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins' announcement that she will not support Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education. That announcement and another from an Alaska Republican have put the nomination in danger. Mal Leary has details.
Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins told fellow senators in a floor speech that she will not vote to confirm DeVos, even though she will support bringing the nomination to the floor for consideration. Collins says DeVos has been a good advocate for school choice, but
I'm concerned that Mrs. DeVos's lack of experience with public schools will make it difficult for her to fully understand, identify, and assist with those challenges, particularly for our rural schools in states like Maine.
Collins says she's concerned that during her confirmation hearing, DeVos did not seem to understand the importance of the landmark 1975 law, the IDEA Act, that requires students with disabilities get an appropriate public school education. In the closely divided Senate, Collins' vote could be crucial. Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski joined Collins in announcing her opposition, and one more Republican defection could doom DeVos's chances. Maine Independent Senator Angus King announced his opposition earlier this week. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
An agreement reached between the Cumberland County District Attorney's Office and a group of Black Lives Matter protesters fell apart today in a dispute over a required restorative justice session. Now it seems prosecutors will reinstate misdemeanor charges, which had been put on hold. Fred Beffer reports.
Last July, police arrested 17 protesters after they blocked off a busy street in Portland's waterfront commercial district. In exchange for having criminal charges against them put on hold, the protesters agreed to participate in a restorative justice meeting with Police Chief Michael Soschik and other officers. It was supposed to be held at a neutral location, the First Parish Unitarian Universalist Church. And according to prosecutors, the deal included a provision that the meeting would be split into two groups with separate sessions held over the course of the day. If that proved a success and the protesters each paid a fine, the charges could eventually be dropped.
Chief Soschik and I arrived there, and it became very clear that they were not coming to the table with the conditions that we had laid out ahead of time.
Deputy District Attorney Jennifer Ackerman says the 17 demanded that they all stay together in one group for the meeting. For law enforcement, that was a non-starter.
I mean, that was something that we really thought was important to this process, to be able to hear from all of them, to really have a good, meaningful conversation. It needed to be in smaller group setting.
None of the protesters could be reached for comment. Stacy Newman, a lawyer for one of them, says she believes the conflict can be resolved outside of court.
Nobody that I'm aware of has done a restorative program at this large of a scale before. So I think there was a lot of moving pieces, how information was shared or not shared. So I don't think it was about goodwill on anybody's part. I really don't.
I didn't see a group that arrived with good faith. I saw a group that came in with demands and changes to a written agreement with the district attorney's office. That just sends a poor message from the very beginning.
Chief Soschik drew a contrast between this particular group's style of protest and open lines of communication between police and participants in many other recent protests and rallies in Portland. That includes the Women's March 2 weekends ago that drew as many as 10,000, but featured no arrests or significant conflicts with police.
We do it all the time. So I am absolutely disappointed that an issue like this, which again had very important messages at its core, turned into an example of how not to do a protest, how not to do a rally, how not to do an event, because I think you lose the message. And it's too important of a message to have it lost that way.
Prosecutor Jennifer Ackerman says there's still a possibility that the two sides could return to the restorative justice model, but she and her boss, District Attorney Stephanie Anderson, both say they expect they'll move toward motions and a trial. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Historically, the dirty work of American democracy is done in the halls of Congress and state legislatures, but in more than half of U.S. states, activists can't get any traction for their policies in the state capitol, have the option of turning directly to voters. Maine is one of those 26 states in which progressive groups are using ballot initiatives to move policy. As Steve Missler reports, Republicans are pushing back with legislation that'll make it harder to do that.
Activists in both parties have tried to use Maine's century-old ballot initiative law to push their own issues, be it gay marriage, tax reform, or gun control. Following the most recent election, in which groups successfully convinced voters to raise the minimum wage, tax the wealthy to fund education, legalize marijuana, and overhaul the state's election system, Republican lawmakers have proposed nearly a dozen bills to make it more difficult to qualify for the ballot.
This process needs to be changed. It is interfering with our elected job as representatives of the people.
Republican Senate leader Garrett Mason is among the advocates for stricter ballot access. Mason believes well-heeled outside groups have used the initiative too often to implement big, complicated policy changes that are better handled by the legislature.
People can come in here and buy our elections. And I hate to say that, but it's happened way too many times recently.
Groups spent over $10 million last year on five ballot initiatives. More than half of that came from the organization backed by former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, which tried and failed to tighten background checks on gun sales. The background check campaign became the poster child for what conservatives say is a referendum process hijacked by wealthy interest groups. Enter a number of new bills aimed at stopping or at least slowing that trend. One would exclude wildlife issues from the citizen initiative law, an attempt to prevent a third bear baiting referendum. Another appears designed to bar gun-related issues from appearing on the ballot at all, and several others would force campaigns to obtain signatures from rural parts of the state, not just the urban centers, in order to qualify for the ballot.
The thought is that we need to make it a little bit more difficult to get things on the ballot, or not so much even so much difficult, but that you would have buy-in from all sections of the state on some kind of equal process.
Republican Representative Lance Harville has proposed a bill that would ask voters to amend the state constitution and require ballot campaigns to gather signatures from each of the 35 state Senate districts. Right now, there is no geographical requirement. Campaigns need only gather signatures equal to 10% or more of the number of people who voted in the most recent gubernatorial election. In his weekly radio address following the election, Governor Paul LePage said he'd also propose changing the Constitution around ballot questions.
Residents in southern Maine should not be able to control the citizen initiative process.
This is simply lawlessness.
Justine Sarver is the director of the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center, a D.C.-based group that provides legal advice and political expertise for liberal ballot campaigns, including last year's Question 4, which raised the minimum wage. She says efforts to tighten ballot access by Republicans is hypocritical because conservatives have historically used ballot initiatives to forward their own agendas, and they did that in a time when they were lacking political leverage. 8 years ago, when Democrats controlled half of the nation's state houses, Republicans turned to citizen initiatives, including a $4.5 million effort in 2009 to overturn Maine's gay marriage law and a Republican-backed effort to repeal a tax reform bill passed by the Democratic-controlled legislature. But now, the GOP controls two-thirds of the country's partisan chambers, has total control of government in over half the states, and the Congress and the White House. The Republican dominance, says Sarver, partially explains the emergence of over 160 initiatives nationwide last year, including five in Maine.
It is, in these times especially, an important tool both for protest and for policymaking in the progressive realm.
Perhaps it's no surprise that Republicans don't see it that way and are trying to raise the bar for campaigns to qualify for the ballot. Lawmakers in South Dakota are eyeing a change that would increase the number of signatures to get on the ballot. In other states, Republicans have passed ballot questions to compete with citizen-initiated ballot questions, a tactic critics say is designed to overwhelm and confuse voters. These kind of efforts are not new. past attempts to change Maine's ballot law have encountered fierce resistance from both parties, including a protest in the form of a mock funeral at the State House 16 years ago.
Activists from across the state are paying their last respects to an old friend. Not a person, a process.
The public affairs segment produced by Maine Public Television at the time shows a Cadillac hearse, pallbearers, and a casket draped in a bicentennial flag. The dozen or so mourners objected to a slate of proposals that would have required petition signatures from multiple counties, banned circulators from polling places, and increased the number of signatures to get on the ballot. Mary Adams, a longtime conservative activist, was among them. She and the so-called Band of Freedom Fighters had used the initiative law 25 years earlier to repeal the statewide property tax. But here, Adams accuses supporters of the changes for ignoring the Constitution and suppressing the voice of the, quote, little guy.
There's going to be a bunch of freedom fighters of the future with little money and a great tax cause, and you and the others are trying to squelch their chance.
In that year, Adams and other conservatives actually teamed with progressive groups to defeat the changes. But now, well-financed interest groups affiliated with both parties have more at stake in ballot campaigns. Whether the looming partisan charge debate produces any changes is unclear. But when it comes to ballot initiatives and political parties, the old axiom seems to apply. They love it when they need it. They hate it when they don't. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.